Adam Savage is on the show today. I had a chance to spend some time with Adam last weekend in Las Vegas when we were both attending James Randi's amazing meeting. I've been going for 4 years now. Adam showed up last year and had such a good time that he said he's going to come back every year, which was great for those of us who have been veterans and longtime friends of Randi to have one of the Mythbusters being a part of our group. And I'm very happy he has some time on a day off today. Hi, Adam. How are you?
Very good. How are you, Paul?
I'm doing just great. Before we were getting on the air here this afternoon, we were talking about having seen the most recent Mythbusters episode where you almost drowned in a car. It was a great one, but it was the first episode I've seen in a long time in which it seemed to me like you were really freaking out.
Okay. Well, let me disabuse you of that notion, because I wasn't. I'm really quite comfortable in the water, and in a sequence that didn't make it into the show, I was able to hold my breath for a minute and 50 seconds.
Mm, wow.
And I wanted to make a good show of it, so,
uh-huh.
You know, I thrashed around like one ought to when one's in a car that's sinking. The thing also, I don't know if this also made it into the final episode, Jamie came in the next day and said that even though he knew I was comfortable and he knew I was competent and he, you know, he's taken 5,000 people under the water when he was a dive instructor in the Virgin Islands, and he knows how to get a regulator into someone's mouth, even if they're freaking out. Even though he knew all that stuff, he said the image of me thrashing around in the front seat was so horrifying that he didn't get any sleep that night.
Wow.
Yeah. Who would have thought that Jamie had empathy?
What is the closest you've really come to danger on the show? I mean, obviously, now that the show's a success, there are insurance people who are looking over everything you're doing, and you probably can't cross the street without somebody making sure that the street is going to be clear.
Well, you know, it's funny. It definitely has inhibited us in some ways, but we've also looked for novel ways to get around that. We have a whole safety team that interacts with the insurers on our behalf and makes recommendations to us. And the safety company is actually the same people who do safety for both Fear Factor and the Jackass films.
Wow.
So they're talented.
And they're busy.
And they know what to do with a couple of idiots who are like no one's ever tried before.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are times when, you know, like doing the, we did awning fall. Can you fall through several awnings and survive?
From Temple of Doom.
And the insurance company wouldn't let me do the stunt. They wouldn't let me put on a harness and allow stuntman to drop me on a descender through these awnings. And, you know, there are times when they just get, well, they get nervous because we call it a stunt, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we have to come to terms with the fact that Jamie and I are a valuable commodity in addition to being the host of the show.
Yeah, first year they might have let you do that. Third year, no. We're making money now.
Absolutely. That's absolutely right. First year we had, like, carte blanche, you know, the fire department would call us up after they watched an episode and go, hey, don't do that again. The closest we've ever come to real injury, I mean, there are little things that happen that aren't even really obvious on the show. You know, some silly, simple mistake we make that could have yielded something, you know, more deadly than you realized in the beginning. The real wake-up call came during Tree Cannon, when we built a cannon out of a 150-pound log.
Yeah.
And we fired the cannon beautifully, but, of course, the myth included the cannon blowing up, so we needed 5 pounds of black powder. This was the very first season, one of the very first big explosions we did. And we did the research and found out that a pyrotechnician is licensed to handle 5 pounds of black powder. So we hired this pyrotechnician for the movies. And now remember, his job is to make things look like they're blowing up, not to actually blow things up.
Right.
He vaporizes gasoline and makes fireballs. And he's a very competent guy. But when we asked him where we should stand with this tree cannon, when it blows up, he said he was going to stand 250 feet away. So we said, okay, that's great. For a safety factor, we'll all stand 350 feet away. And when that cannon blew up, every single part of it, no part of which weighed less than like 40 pounds, every single part of it flew over all of our heads.
Whoa!
And that was our wake-up call, that the guy who's licensed to do what we think we want to do is not necessarily the guy with the experience to do it.
Yeah.
And that's when, you know, we started bringing in the FBI.
And that FBI guy who goes out with you when you're really blowing stuff up, like when you go to the quarry and you blow things up big time, he really, really keeps an eye out for you guys, doesn't he?
Frank Doyle, he's a retired special agent. He is an amazing guy. He was present at the arrest of Patty Hearst.
Wow.
Wow.
He is the guy that led the task force to storm the Ted Kaczynski's cabin.
Hmm.
Now,
bit of a resume there.
Yeah, I know. He's amazing.
And now he's working with the Mythbusters.
Yeah, well, he says this is his fun job. This is where he gets to have fun. And the thing that works with him is that he really is, there's a great simpatico between the Mythbusters crew and Frank and his bomb techs, because, you know, their specialty is all contingency planning.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually Jamie's and my specialty, too. It's all about what to do with something when you don't know what's going to happen. Where's the safety margin?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Frank's the first guy. I think the first myth we brought him on was during the Jaws special when we fired a .30-06 into the bottom of an aluminum dive tank. And we didn't know what it was going to do. We put it inside a big metal container, you know, one of the truck containers, and we thought that might stop it. And Frank said, yeah, that might, but just in case, let's go around the other side of this building when we do it. You know, Frank taught us, if you can't see it and there's a big brick wall between you and it, you're probably fine.
Yeah, just in case is a very important phrase.
Exactly.
Just in case.
Yeah, we actually, when we did the tree cannon, the cameraman, when the tree cannon parts all flew over us, the cameraman was so angry about that I think the next myth we did was explosive decompression, where we blew up the plane, and we're missing one of the key shots of the plane going up because the cameraman wouldn't stick his camera out of the shelter.
Oh.
He was like, no way, man.
It's News Talk 1120 KMOX. Paul Harris talking with Adam Savage, one of the Mythbusters on the Discovery Channel. New episodes air every Wednesday night. And how long does it take to make an average episode? And I ask because it seems that on some episodes you're doing things that take longer than a week from start to finish, and I can't help but thinking that sometimes you're working on more than one show at a time.
Oh, actually, most of the time we're working on more than one show. I think at one point, somewhere in season two or three, we were working on seven different myths at the same time.
Like you'd make something in the morning, and then it would have to dry for 2 days, and
exactly.
So you'd work on something else.
Yeah, and the extreme case is, will a Rolling Stone gather any moss? I mean, we left that experiment running for 6 months.
Right.
So, yeah, on average, we have about 5 to 7 days to bust a myth. And given that the build team is usually providing about 35% to 40% of the content for a show, and Jamie and I the balance, they usually have to wrap them up in about, you know, 4 to 6 days. We have about 5 to 7 days. And, I mean, that's 5 to 7 days to train goldfish. That's 5 to 7 days to crash two semi-trucks into each other.
Mm-hmm.
Did it take that long with the flatulence experiment? What my son's personal favorite, by the way.
Yeah, you know, that was one that we tried for. It took us years to get Discovery to let us shoot that episode.
Really?
We had to agree not to say, can I say?
No.
F-word on the radio?
No.
We had to agree not to say it on television.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. You can say flatulence, but you can't say the four-letter F-word for that is the same thing for it. Yeah.
I think that what tipped the scales was when we did Son of a Gun, which was an episode about a Civil War soldier shot in the privates, and the same bullet then pierced the womb of a woman 50 feet away, supposedly impregnating her.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
And we managed, apparently Discovery's been pitched this myth to do for historical reenactment shows for decades, and they've turned it down every single time. And we finally made the pitch and said we can do it tastefully. We promised that no parent would be uncomfortable explaining anything we were doing in the show.
Mm-hmm.
And we did. Discovery was absolutely pleased. The show rated really well. And I think that's what gave them the courage to let us do the flatulence episode.
And it worked there as well. And last year at the Amazing Meeting, Adam brought one of the, what did you call it, a flatulence receptacle?
Yeah, it's a flatus containment device.
There you go. and auctioned it off and raised quite a bit of money. And this year he brought something really cool, because if you saw one of the Christmas episodes they did the biggest Rube Goldberg device I've ever seen anybody do on television. Where, you know, things had to fly into other things and knock over robots that went down here and lit a candle in the all sorts of things. Well, he actually had to draw that whole thing out.
Oh.
And so he brought the pieces of paper, all 8.5 by 11 pieces of paper that he had taped one right after the other, and brought that and auctioned it off. And went for over $3,000, didn't it?
I think it went for just about exactly $3,000. And the woman that bought it turned out to be a local patent attorney who thought it was the perfect thing to have up on her wall.
Oh, that's
excellent.
Great.
Excellent.
So I signed it to her, to my favorite patent attorney.
Do a lot of kids watch?
Yeah, actually, our show is, I mean, I get a tremendous, the bulk of my emails from kids between the ages of, like, 6 and 15.
Mm-hmm, that's where mine are.
Yeah. My daughter absolutely loves the show. And the great thing about it is, you know, you mentioned that the people who insure you are the same ones who insure the people from Jackass. Your show is Jackass meets Mr. Wizard.
Oh, absolutely. No, that's, we've been saying that since the get-go. It's been really, you know, I have a good friend who said it to me, I think when I was shooting the pilots, and she still claims ownership of that phrase, but I'm like, it's just out there. It's exactly what we're doing. We're tricking you into learning a little science by, you know, me falling on my ass.
Who draws the blueprints that we see at the beginning of each segment?
There's three or four people. The blueprint drawings are always drawn by either Jamie or I. And you can tell the difference because mine are really well drawn and Jamie's really sloppy. His handwriting's like, you know, serial killer's handwriting.
Really?
But the opening titles... where, you know, you actually see us draw out the name of the myth.
Yes.
I'd say I do about 50% of those. Jamie does about 20%. And the rest, the ones that are really elaborate and beautiful, are done by one of our researchers named Eric Haven, who's actually a really talented comic book artist.
Okay.
And so whenever you see really good caricatures or animals drawn actually well, that's Eric.
All right. Well, he gets some credit here on the show here today. Stand by, Adam. I got to take a break. We'll come back and talk more. Talking with Adam Savage, co-star of Mythbusters on the Discovery Channel, and one-time star of a Billy Joel music video. Adam was one of the kids in Billy Joel's video, You're Only Human, a song I think he wrote to prevent teenage suicide. And you ended up being the guy who... Are you the one being pulled out of the ocean?
I am the one being pulled out of the ocean. That is so weird. The music came in, and I was like, why is that song familiar to me?
Thank you, YouTube. How did you get that job?
You know, I decided I wanted to do acting after being in a couple of school plays. And my father had been a fairly big-time commercial director in New York in the 60s. And so still had a lot of contacts. And he called up a friend of his, a guy named Charlie Kimbrough, who played... Charlie ended up getting a lot of success on Murphy Brown playing Jim Dial.
Oh, yes! Yeah.
Well, back then, Charlie was doing, like, Broadway shows, like Sondheim shows and stuff like that. And my dad said, could you hook up my son with an agent? And I got signed up with ICM. And they sent me out on some things. I got a Charmin commercial, my very first audition. I think the Billy Joel music video was about a month into my auditioning. I did really well in the beginning. And then, I don't know, you know, puberty took its hold, and then I only started to get radio work.
Yeah, that's what happens to all of us good-looking kids who turn into radio people. That's our excuse, too. 314-436-7900, toll-free 800-925-1120. Jane, you're on KMOX. Say hi to Adam Savage.
Hello, this is Paul Johnson.
Hi, Paul. How are you?
Hi, Paul.
I'm Jane's son.
Okay. You have a question for Adam?
Well, I love Mythbusters. I watch it all the time.
That's excellent. How old are you?
Eight.
Eight? You're absolutely our target audience, but you're not trying anything we do on the show at home, are you?
No, but on my special program called SOAR... Or coming up, we have a new thing called Kitchen Chemistry. Mom thinks we might bring in the Mentos in the Diet Cola experiment.
That's an excellent idea. And my favorite thing about the Mentos and Diet Soda is Diet Soda doesn't get sticky.
Paul?
Wow.
Yeah. So you could be starting out your own little Mythbusters career there. Thank you so much for calling.
You're welcome.
Have a good day.
Adam, you hear from kids all the time who want to do what you do on TV, don't you?
Yeah, actually, one of the things we do, Jamie and I do a fair amount during the year, is do speaking engagements at colleges and stuff. And we were at Rensselaer Polytechnic, and the first question we got from one of the students was, what advice would you give to an engineering student who wants to blow stuff up on television?
Good one.
Yeah, you know, I get a tremendous amount of career advice emails, and they're actually I try and answer a fair bit of them. But really, the best thing I have to say when people say they want to do what we do is, you know, the only reason Jamie and I got this job is because we're actually really interested in what we're doing.
Yeah, the real answer is first get a Charmin commercial.
Yes, exactly. Work with Mr. Whipple, and that's the key to the world.
But you actually had a long career doing special effects stuff in Hollywood. You worked at ILM. You worked on a couple of the Star Wars movies. And you worked on a movie that I love, which I wish more people had seen, called Galaxy Quest.
Ah, that's a great movie.
With Tim Allen and Tony Shalhoub and Sigourney Weaver.
Yeah.
I think more people have seen it on DVD and on cable than actually saw it in the theaters. What did you work on for that?
Oh, you know what? I included on my resume. I only worked on that movie for about 2 weeks, but I love it so much. I've always kept it on my resume. In the scene when they're pulling the ship out of the port and they scrape against the side of the port.
Yes.
I built the super close-up version of that of the walkway that they crash into.
Okay.
That was it. The show was going on for about 8 months at ILM. I only got to work on it for 2 weeks, but it really, of all the movies I've worked on, that's my favorite.
Oh, it's a terrific movie. And so that was you as model maker?
Yes, that was me as model maker. I spent about 5 years at ILM building miniature sets, miniature ships. I got a lot of latitude to do a lot of different things because I could build the stuff, I could run a crew, I could also paint it, light it, run it on set.
Wow.
And Grant and Tori, who are also on MythBusters with you, it's you and Adam and Grant and Tori and Carrie, of course. But Grant and Tori also, did they work with you at ILM?
Yeah, absolutely. No, I those guys were both fixtures up there by the time I got there. Grant had started out actually at Skywalker Sound because he got a degree in electrical engineering, but also in acoustics. And then he migrated from Skywalker Sound into the model shop where he's like pretty much the electronics guru, and he's fantastic for our show because none of us know a whit about electricity.
That's good to admit.
And how did Carrie get on the show?
Well, you know, way back in the summer of 2002, we were shooting the pilots. We had no idea what was going to go on. I mean, you know, these two guys showed up to shoot the pilots, producer and a cameraman, and that was it. And we're sitting around the shop sort of talking through what the next 5 weeks is going to be like. And Carrie arrives to interview for an intern position for Jamie's shop.
M5,
yes. And she was there, and we were talking about doing the airplane, stuck on the airplane toilet seat myth. And Jamie had just gotten this software that allowed you to both scan somebody and manipulate the scan in 3D with all this equipment and everything. And so he was like, Carrie, would you mind putting on a bodysuit and getting your butt scanned for television? So that was Carrie's very first. She was on MythBusters on the very first day of production. And then we went through a whole year and a half of shooting the whole first season. And when we were done with that, we realized Discovery wanted twice as many shows. There wasn't enough of us to go around. We needed more MythBusters. The very first suggestion Discovery made was, go get that girl from the very first episode.
Mm-hmm.
Humiliation is a key to all hazing. and as long as, you know, the first lesson of television is that funny and humility are mutually humiliation and funny are synonymous.
Yes.
My dignity and good television are mutually exclusive.
Which explains the complete appeal of the MythBusters.
Yes.
Right there. By the way, does M5 still do other things, or is MythBusters completely taken over?
Both. M5 still did a bunch of commercial production effects work for the first couple of seasons, but that has really died down in Northern California.
Hmm.
There's almost no real shops up here anymore, so there's nobody who even thinks about it. But Jamie has managed to keep the shop running, and MythBusters has now finally started to have a real effect on the kind of jobs that come through. Jamie and I are both getting calls for consultation from all sorts of random people who just want our viewpoint on something. So Jamie's doing some spec work for the military right now on two different projects. We're doing some problem solving for some other companies. I mean, it's now people who say, I want a no-nonsense, out-of-the-box opinion about how this might work.
Mm-hmm. And for the no-nonsense, they go to Jamie, not you.
Exactly. I'm the closer. I'm funny in a meeting.
If they say we want a nonsense opinion, get Adam in here. Talking with Adam Savage, co-host of the Mythbusters, new episodes Wednesday nights on the Discovery Channel and reruns all during the week. So if you ask somebody, hey, did you see the latest Mythbusters, they may not quite be sure because who knows what episode they saw in the meantime. And when he's not here, I'm sure he's online looking at all the suggestions that must be just pouring in by email or through the Discovery Channel website. Is that where a lot of ideas are coming from now, Adam?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a tremendous amount of ideas we get on the show right from the fans. I got one a few weeks ago, actually. Somebody who drives a big rig said, you know, you guys should attack some big rig myths. And they asked me, they suggested three. And the third one wasn't that great, but we had another one on our board for a long time that we wanted to try, which was, can you drive up into the back of a big rig like the kit car used to do in Night Rider?
Oh,
that's
yeah.
Cool.
The Bond thing.
And we were like, all of a sudden, we've got a whole episode. That's a full hour. So the fan contributions can be amazing. Do you guys know the site metafilter.com?
No, I'm not familiar with that.
It's referred to amongst its members as the hive mind. It's a place where you can post questions that about 10,000 people all around the world will read and give advice on everything from where should I go out to dinner in Muncie to, you know, how do I break up with my girlfriend to what kind of server should I use for my website.
Wow.
And we want to do some Old West stuff, and I posted to Metafilter and got 40 pages of suggestions.
Wow.
From avid watchers as to things they'd like to see us do on the show. It was fantastic.
And I'm sure you're familiar with other things like Snopes.
Oh, yeah.
And other websites where you can go and check on some of these urban legends that go around like
email.
Wildfire
yeah.
by
yeah.
email.
The Straight Dope is actually a real common one. In fact, Cecil on The Straight Dope referred to one of our experiments, I think, for the very first time just a couple weeks ago.
Cool.
As the definitive test to prove something someone is asking about.
Well, that's the nice thing about the show is you actually are testing some of these things, although on a couple of occasions you've had to go revisit some stuff because people on the internet said you got it wrong.
Yes. Well, you know, we do our best to find the experts that we can find that know about what we're doing, but we don't always succeed in finding the best person for the job. And a fair bit of the time, after we've shot something, we discover that we messed up some key aspect of the myth. And
mm-hmm.
to me, it's one of the most scientific things we do on the show is exhibit a complete willingness, in fact, glee, to say that we screwed up, and here's the new answer.
Yep. Let me go to the phones here. Mike, say hi to Adam Savage.
Hey, how you doing, Adam?
Hey, Mike, how are you?
Well, you know what? I'm doing all right, but I'll have to admit, one, I'm a super fan, but I haven't seen all of your shows.
That's okay. Neither have I.
So, okay, good. I got a question. If you got any plans to debunk the myth that hot water freezes quicker than cold water?
You know, that's a really common one, and we have actually looked deeply into this problem. And the biggest problem we have with it is it's really boring television.
You mean watching water freeze isn't good TV?
Oh, come on. It's got to be better than watching water boil.
Yeah, it turns out, actually, that experimentally there are people who have worked it out, and there is a certain temperature threshold whereby a cup of water of a certain temperature that's above a cup of water of another certain temperature will freeze faster. That's not to say that hot water freezes faster than cold water. That's not true from the research that we've done. And we cannot – it may end up being something that we do as a mini-myth that will show up on the web or
some
Discovery's website, but I don't think it's going to make it onto the show.
All right, Mike, I'm glad you called. Let me get Richie on here. You're on KMOX. Say hi to Adam.
Adam.
Hey.
I want you to test the myth. You tested the ejector seat.
Yes.
But in the James Bond movie, Die Another Day, he used the ejector seat to flip his car over because it was upside down. And you should test to see if the ejector seat is powerful enough to flip the car over.
We have actually started discussions with the James Bond people to try. They're not sure they want us to tackle their myths on the show. But we're talking to them about getting some. We would love to do a whole James Bond episode because there's a ton of stuff there.
I'd like you to bust the myth that Denise Richards could be a nuclear scientist.
I wish we could do that stuff on the show. You have to save that for Penn and Teller.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, what do you want to blow up that you haven't blown up yet?
Oh, wow. That's a good question. It's funny. The blowing stuff up isn't as much fun as it seems. I mean, it's great to watch it happen. It's mostly really dangerous and scary when you're setting it up because you're, you know, standing next to hundreds of pounds of high explosives sometimes.
Right.
No matter what the guy who's handling it tells you, it's still pretty spooky.
And now you know, stand behind the FBI guy.
Exactly. Human shield technique.
But what was that story you were telling me last weekend about somebody wants to give you a house to blow up?
Yeah. This is one of the greatest things about the popularity of the show is that, you know, when we want to blow up cement trucks, we found someone who gave us four of them for free. And, you know, we're doing this thing about a boat that got split in half, and we managed to get a, you know, what in new condition would be a $100,000 boat for about $1,500. And we got contacted by a realtor down south of San Francisco who's about to demolish this this property on an acre of land. It's a 4,000-square-foot house, and he'd like the Mythbusters to do the first part of the demolition for him.
Now you got to come up with a myth that fits there.
Yeah, well, it's actually just, it's kind of a plug-and-play thing. We have several house-destroying myths. It's just trying to figure out whether or not we could do more than one of them in the same location, like blow up the upstairs and then blow up the downstairs, or just drive the car all the way through.
Oh, like that one.
I wonder who wants to be behind the wheel for that one.
Oh, yeah.
And what the insurance company says.
You know, I always get the question of, like, why do you do all the dumb stunts? And it's like, because I get the chance to.
Yeah. Well, it pays off. It's great TV, and it's great to have you here on the radio today, Adam. I know it's your day off, and I appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Anytime.
I'll talk to you soon.
All right, Paul.